today's gospel is certainly a challenging one. Let's not pretend otherwise. Jesus seems deliberately confrontational when he starts to address the crowds by telling them that anyone who wants to be one of his disciples must hate a whole list of people. Whom are we required to hate, according to Jesus? Father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, and our own selves. In other words, hate all the people whom we love the most. Very strange thing to say. Reading this strange passage about hating our father and mother brought back to mind my own late parents and an incident from 3 years ago when they were still alive. Because the last time this gospel came up on a Sunday was 3 years ago. It comes up every 3 years because that's how the Sunday readings are arranged. Anyway, back in 2019, I was visiting my hometown where my father was already very weak and declining rapidly. He died the next month, although we didn't know that he would die so soon. And my mother was suffering from fourth stage cancer. So I went to visit them, and my father was too weak to attend the mass in the parish, but my mother was there. And at the end of the mass, I was just concelebrating with the parish priest, and after the mass was over, we processed out the center aisle like that. And my mother was sitting at the end of the pew. And so I leaned over and kissed her, and I said, "The gospel tells me that I'm supposed to hate you, but I'm not doing a very good job of it." And she laughed out loud. She thought it was so funny. And then she told all her friends that I wasn't following the gospel. So no, I don't hate my mother, I don't hate my father, I don't hate my brothers or sisters, and I hope that you don't hate members of your family either. But then, what are we supposed to do with these strong words of Jesus, who says we have to hate father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, and our own life? Well, he can't mean what it sounds like at first. He can't mean hate your family members, because that would contradict everything that he teaches in so many other places. Jesus teaches us to love God and love our neighbor. He teaches strongly the fourth commandment, honor your father and your mother, not hate them. And he even teaches us to love our enemies and to pray for our persecutors. So what he's doing here is he's using exaggeration. He's using what they call hyperbole in order to make his point. And what's his point? His point is following him must be our absolute primary concern. It has to be our absolutely highest priority. Don't let anything interfere with your commitment to follow Jesus. So telling us to hate those whom we love most is simply a strong way of saying, love him more than anyone else. Love him more than anyone else. Now, anybody who has tried to do this knows that there are times when following Jesus will cause tensions in relationships. It will even cause divisions in families. Divisions between us and our closest loved ones. Sometimes people will suspect that we do hate them because we don't go along with their position or support their candidate or support their cause or join in their activities. Jesus knows this. He knows that following him is going to create these divisions. He's telling us to follow him, not our family, not our friends, not our culture, not our political party, not the in crowd. Jesus. He must come first, even if we have to walk alone. That's the gospel. Perhaps you know that old song, "I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. I have decided to follow Jesus." One of the lines goes, though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back. And there are times when deciding to follow the expectations of our family members is a decision not to follow the Lord. Don't do that. This is what Jesus is telling us. Now, he continues his instruction with two little parables because he really wants us to reflect on and understand the demands, the cost of being a disciple, of being a Christian. The first one, he says, it's like we are someone who wants to construct a tower. Well, we have to sit down and calculate the cost before we begin building anything. Otherwise, we might start the building and then run out of money. There are a lot of towers around, a lot of new buildings in Metro Manila. Every time I go out, I see another new one. So this image should be easy to understand. And it's easy to understand what an embarrassment it is to have an unfinished building and run out of money. What a disaster it is. Well, it's a much bigger disaster if you say that you're going to follow Jesus and then realize that you don't want to pay the price. That's a disaster. The other comparison that Jesus gives is that we are like a king marching into battle. We have to sit down and reflect on whether we can defeat the enemy or not. Now, we have to keep in mind, Jesus is not trying to frighten us away. He's not trying to intimidate us into refusing to follow him. He wants us to follow him. Of course, he wants us to follow him, not for his own sake, but for our sake, because it's the best way for us. Following him is truly the way to lasting happiness. We have to keep this in mind as we weigh the costs and the benefits, because if the cost is high, and it is high, then the benefits must be great, and they are great. At the end of this building project, we don't end up simply with a tower or a condo. We end up in heaven, in eternal happiness. It's worth the cost. At the end of the battle, the spiritual battle of this life, life in this world, we don't simply defeat some earthly opponent. No, we share in Jesus' own victory, his victory over sin, his victory over death, his victory over Satan. So even if the cost is high, it's nothing by comparison to the benefits, eternal benefits. Now, when Jesus speaks about the necessity of carrying our cross or about the necessity of renouncing all our possessions, he's not threatening us, he's challenging us so that we rise to the challenge. Let me conclude by recalling a famous story from Mother Teresa of Calcutta. Everybody knows Mother Teresa, Saint Mother Teresa. Her feast day is tomorrow, that's why she came to my mind. Tomorrow, September 5, is her 25th death anniversary. She died in 1997. Anyway, this is the story, you probably have heard it. A reporter one day was observing Mother Teresa at work, and she was caring for a destitute man who had been abandoned in the streets, and she picked him up, and he was covered with sores, and he was filthy, and he smelled terrible, and she was cleaning his wounds. And the reporter said, "I wouldn't do what you do for $1 million. And Mother Teresa turned to him, looked up at him, and said, "Neither would I." Well, then why is she doing it? Why is she carrying this cross? Why is she building this tower of charity? Why is she fighting this battle at the sacrifice of her own comfort, her own safety, her own health? Not for money, not for popularity, not because she liked doing it, not because she had the satisfaction of being a good person, only for Jesus. Only because this is what he asked her to do. She's not a saint. Mother Teresa's not a saint because she served the poor. She's a saint because she followed Jesus. She was a good disciple. She paid the price, the cost of discipleship. She was a good disciple. And Jesus is asking us to be good disciples. He's asking us to follow him. He's asking us to say yes to him. No turning back. No turning back. Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta, pray for us.